we get comfortable with the current inefficiencies, and then we sort of get married to that. And a lot of the current inefficiencies include individual heroic efforts to make something work. Like in VDC, it was like, well, we developed this workaround. It's like, oh, high five, you found a workaround. It's like, well, maybe it should just work that way.
Welcome back to Built Different, a podcast and community choosing to approach innovation differently. I'm Grant Hagen.
I'm Brian Vizzaretta.
And we're on a mission to rewrite the narrative around what innovation truly means.
Last season, we did 12 episodes more focused on the field.
And this season, we packed up our gear, joining teams in site trailers, offices, and even a few podcast studios, where we focused on the executive level and how innovation is making an impact within their organizations.
New this season, we're introducing live streams to invite you to join the conversation.
Also, we want to equip you by providing show recaps from each episode in our new Built Different download. Think different, be different, and build different.
All right, we'll get things started. Well, welcome in, team, to the Build Different podcast powered by DronePoy Instruction Site. We are here again yet at ENR Future Tech with a couple of our friends over at DPR. With Koshal and Josh. This is going to be really fun. Brian and I say this, I feel like, repeatedly on here, but I don't know how we get to wrangle in some of these guys to come and be a part of these conversations. One, appreciate you guys making the time. I know it's crazy busy when you're at events and conferences like this to step aside and really engage in a conversation like this. And so appreciate you guys making the time. It's good to have you on.
No problem.
Thanks for having us.
Awesome. Well, Koshal, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background, kind of what you do at DPR. To give a little lay of the land for the listeners that are tuning in with us here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So Koshal Diwan, I work out of our Sacramento office. I've been with DPR for almost 12 years now. I've been in the industry for about 17 plus. I've pretty much played every single role in construction, from estimating as my first job to running projects, running self-performed crews. I really enjoyed the technology side of the business. So late 2008 timeframe is when I got into VDC. And that's really where my career started taking off. That's what actually brought me to DPR. Two-thirds of my time at DPR, I've run the innovation team, and I've focused on the construction technology side of the business. And about 6 to 7 years of my time at DPR, I led the innovation group, and which is what then now brought me to my current role, which is where I lead our investments and ventures and partnerships.
And your title is?
Strategic Investments and Partnerships.
Strategic Investments and Partnerships. Perfect. I have so many questions, and this is going to be so much fun. Koshal, that was great. Where are you from originally?
So I grew up in New Jersey.
Okay.
I, after college, went into the Air Force. I was on active duty for 4.5 years. I've lived in different parts of the country, and I settled in Sacramento area.
Awesome. Love it. Mr. Josh, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so current role is West Coast Innovation Lead for DPR. And that basically means that I help DPR explore new technologies, pilot and test them, but also take them to a scaling and adoption phase. Lately, been focused a lot on what that process looks like from a planning perspective and from a vetting and prioritization and ROI perspective. But as far as like background in the industry, very, very similar to Koshal, actually. I started in 2001 at a civil engineering firm, mm-hmm. connecting the dots in CAD. Taught myself how to do CAD like way back in the day. And that sort of launched me into doing different things in operations. I touched a little bit on estimating and pre-con as well. And then got really deep into VDC for a long time and sort of rode that wave. That expanded a little bit more into reality capture. I got really deep into reality capture and trying to figure out like what use cases can we bring to DPR that provide value. We worked with our equipment company to procure equipment and teams across DPR to come together and put our heads together on how we were going to use it and how we were going to bring value to DPR as a whole. So,
and you've been at DPR how long?
It'll be about 11 years in July.
Okay, yeah. Cool. And Koshal, you said 17 years in the industry, but how many of those at DPR?
12.
12. Okay, cool. Love it. One, I think what we're really interested in talking, you guys have like a really unique perspective around just this idea that we're talking about in this season, which is just gaining executive buy-in around this idea of technology and implementation. We're at a really unique kind of spot in our industry that I think executive teams and leadership teams are like really starting to invest and dive in of like, oh, maybe this is going to stick around a little bit. Or, hey, I didn't come through an industry being exposed to this, and now I have like teams that are, you know, leading this endeavor. And so what we've really been focusing on this season is conversations around that idea of like, hey, what does it look like to help communicate, educate, and really build buy-in around a leadership team in the company that you're at, around the things that you're doing? Previous season, we talked a lot about getting field level buy-in down for technology that is, you know, being used out on project sites. But we really want to focus the season on the executive level and the leadership teams, two in which I feel like gentlemen here that can speak to that and just the interactions and conversations that you guys get to have at that level. But the first question I really kind of wanted to kick us around is, what do you feel like are the biggest misconceptions that you are hearing from either your leadership team or other leadership teams that around the idea of technology, that it can, I'll just toss a few out, like it's solving all the problems that we have, or yep, hey, things are going great and I don't really have to, you know, triage things along the way. Like, that's a broad question, but one in which we kind of wanted to start of, what are you hearing from your leadership teams about just this kind of boom that's happening in construction around technology playing a really vital role now?
Yeah, I don't know how accurate this is, to be perfectly honest, but the first thing that comes to mind for me is how disruptive technology is viewed. I think that changing things is viewed as being intensely disruptive. But at the same time, that in my mind contrasts with how complex and convoluted construction just is. And, you know, that the fact that things are viewed as being disruptive implies that we have it all figured out and that what we're doing now works perfectly. And if you disrupt that, then, well, you're ruining it. Mm. And it's like, well, it's not perfect. By far, it's not perfect.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things to fix. And I don't think it's as disruptive as we sort of play it out to be, especially on a pilot level. I also see where, you know, when we do pilots and we have teams that are bought in and they are, you know, willing to try something and put it to use and really put it through its paces. You know, one, that's a huge factor in making things, you know, successful with whatever solution. But it just isn't as disruptive as it feels, I think, a lot of times.
And when you say disruptive, are you kind of referring to it in a tone of like, hey, this is just going to totally throw a wrench into all of our, you know, best practices or operate? Like, that's what you feel like the perception leadership maybe has in your perspective?
Yeah. In some cases it's like, well, you know, okay, that's cool, but you're just chasing shiny objects. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I've never viewed it that way. I mean, yes, I love tech. I, you know, I'm into gadgets and things like that, but I've never brought it that way to the job site or to my work. It's always been like, okay, well, that's cool, but how can it really provide value to the business? How can it help folks with their efficiency? How can it help us be safer? That's always been the lens that I look through everything. Personally, yes, I love gadgets and I love, you know, new stuff. And I love just the idea of tech enhancing our lives and things like that. But I understand that we have to look through it through that business perspective and what we're actually trying to achieve on a job site. And I think that's probably another misconception, is that innovation people are just trying to chase, you know, things that are, you know, highly technical, and that, you know, we're trying to, you know, replace jobs with robots or whatever. And it's like, no, I know lots of people in this industry. I've seen what this industry does to the human psyche. I've seen, you know, I've seen the negative effects of our industry, and I'd like to change that.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Cultural, wow. I'm curious to hear your thoughts around that
too. Yeah, no, this is great. I think Josh hit on some really good points there. The disruptive part, I think that some of this is, I don't think it's across the board. There are some leaders who lean in. There are some leaders who understand the value that tech can add, but they want to understand the details, right? Mm-hmm. They're not generalizing. They're not overly, you know, one way or the other. They do understand the complexity of it. I think a lot of reasons why they have those questions is because they understand that by me interjecting this tech into my existing process, it's going to change the way people have to approach the problem. And unless they understand what those changes are, it's hard to really get people bought in, right? And so what's that change? If there's any data involved, is there any integration with existing data, right, to increase how we leverage that information to make decisions? I think that's mainly where some of this stuff comes from. But the good news is also that Everforward is a core value for us. So that conversation is not easier. It's not like a standoffish conversation. It's more, let's put our heads together and let's figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, I love the, the drop of a core value too. It really does reflect a lot of just a company's DNA. I mean, obviously as a core value, but it is a quick thing that I remember using a lot of, like, hey guys, like, I'm not trying to just do something new. Like, you've told me these are important to our company. So my goal is to go and help make that core value, like, live out. And that made the conversation so much easier, right? And for folks that are listening and are, like, struggling with that, it's like, hey, like, maybe do reflect on your core values of, like, what it is and how this can kind of play into it. Any thoughts to that, Brian?
No, I mean, I would definitely just agree with everything you're saying. And it's actually interesting because, you know, nobody wants to make, like, nobody that works for the company wants to make the company worse, right? By bringing on technology. And it's most of the time, like, technology is seen as this, like, other world, but in reality, it's just operations. It's just another way of a methodology to approach the same thing that you already have to do, whether it's taking site photos, like, are we spending more time doing it than not? And it's interesting because the way you, the words are what really captures, like, really stumps people, right? Like, you say the word reality capture, it's like, whoa. Then you say the word site documentation. Oh yeah.
Different.
Okay, yeah. I know what you're talking about, right? Like, yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I'll add to that is the part that we as technology leaders have to be sensitive to is that there is a component of app fatigue on the job site. When you add too many technology tools into a process and you have to ask the job site teams to go here for something and go there for something else, and then you keep adding to that list, it becomes overwhelming for them to manage. So we have to be, you know, cognizant of that. We have to be aware that what we're doing is we're adding an additional tool. Something that our innovation team does really well is they also explore, okay, if we're adding this tool, what are we subtracting from that list? So it has to be a net subtraction, right? You're not making it.
Or can we subtract?
Yeah, or can we subtract?
Yeah. Because I'm only laughing, and Brian, I have to.
It's so funny because, right, like, when you have to bring on a new technology, you have to map out, like, everything down to, like, how many clicks is it going to take for this person to do? But, like, how many of those mapping sessions do we do retroactively on what people currently do? Right? Like,
that's a very
good
point.
How are people currently submitting these things, or how, like, look at those clicks first, right? Like,
yeah, we get comfortable with the current inefficiencies, and then we sort of get married to that. And a lot of the current inefficiencies include individual heroic efforts to make something work. Like in VDC, it was like, well, we developed this workaround. It's like, oh, high five, you found a workaround. It's like, well, maybe it should just work that way.
Yeah.
Right. To shift gears a little bit, I think another misconception that just people have, maybe not even just leadership, is that the pace of change. I think a lot of folks feel like the pace of change is like lightning fast. And it's like, well, is it? Like, if you look at the history of some of these things and you realize that, well, maybe it took a few years for us to go from hearing about a concept to even doing a pilot, or, you know, getting an enterprise agreement, or somebody came up with an idea and, you know, put that out there. And then, you know, now 10 years later, folks are starting to hear about it and all of a sudden it's a buzzword. And it's like, well, there's really the fact that we sort of put our heads down, and there's a lot of folks that look through what they do through a microscope. And then there's those of us that look through a telescope. And there's two very, very different views on, well, this is how it is right now. It's like, yeah, well, if you dive into the granular details of what you're looking at, that is how it is. But we're looking at how it's going to be and how that's going to be in the future. And if we're not prepared for that, then we're going to feel like the pace of change is happening without our influence.
Absolutely. I mean, I completely agree. It's interesting because you will see somebody, like, I've experienced it before, where an executive might say, oh, well, our competition is doing this because they started in one ad or they started in one marketing group. It's like,
or they heard it as a part of a post right. interview brief. Right. And we lost because of this. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, well, it's just the reality is you're right. It's, you know, the technology can only move as fast as the people want it to. Right. So like that is always going to be one of your other hurdles too, is like,
absolutely.
Right. So
I'm curious, Kaushal, you have a pretty unique role in this kind of landscape, right? So I didn't write it fast enough, but strategic investments and partnerships.
That's correct.
Okay, cool. So help me understand a little bit about that role. Why DPR is like considered that a really core part of their business, and what that means in kind of your day to day in interfacing with some of these different technology partners.
So this role, I'll tell you how we got to it. In my innovation seat, what was happening was that the amount of inbound requests from startups for us to try their tools, test their solutions, give them feedback, it just got so much. Like, I'm talking about like 30 to 40 a quarter inbounds, right? And we weren't able to respond back to them fast enough. So that was one thing that we were facing on the innovation side, piloting side, testing side. On the flip side, we had companies that we had made investments in through W&D Ventures that we were not being good partners to. Like, to be honest, we were not going and having the conversation with them of, hey, how can I help you? How can you help us? Like, let's sit down, let's figure out where the challenges are for DPR. Maybe you can help us, you know, figure those problems out and you know, have solutions for those problems. And maybe we can help you in another way. You know, do you need us to, you know, go out there and talk to other venture companies so that you can fundraise? Do you need to go out there and, you know, do we need to go have speaking engagements? So we're talking about the strategic ties between the two businesses and how that helps our operations. We were not doing that. And so we decided that, you know, as our portfolio grew, that we needed to be better partners to the companies. We need to nurture those relationships and be better partners to the companies in our portfolio. So that's the partnership side of it. The strategic investments part was that we initially set up W&D Ventures as a way to be a catalyst to startups and to help them kind of get going off the ground, but not really looking at how other VCs look at it. The VCs that look in are in the venture world, they have specific thesis, they have focus areas, they look at startups in ways and how they partner and do their due diligence. And so we realized we need to do something better with what we currently had. And so my last year and a half, I've focused on what does that process look like? What is our focus area? What are our due diligence criteria? What does that look like? How do we partner with innovation to be part of our due diligence? And so that's really the two-sided, you know, coin for my role. So one hat, I lead on the venture side. I support W&D Ventures. I lead the investments part of it. On the other hat, you know, where I, on the DPR side, I support the innovation team and then our R&D focus.
So many questions. One, let me start with a very basic. Does WND stand for, is it an acronym?
Or it does stand for something.
What?
So DPR, that's the founder's mm-hmm. initials, right? Doug, Peter, Ron. Mm-hmm. WND is the last name initials. Woods, Nazler, Davidowski.
Nice. Okay. I figured there was some fun reason for that. And I could just imagine, and I almost hear some folks in my ear being like, holy cow, I'm so far, like, not even close to that like atmosphere and universe that like you guys live in. And I think while recognizing that is maybe one thing just around the idea of innovation and adoption and executive like buy-in, like it feels a little silly to be here sitting asking you guys like, how do you get executive buy-in? I mean, you probably one of few companies that have been living, breathing it for many, many years. What I'm curious to know though is like, how would you guys encourage others maybe in roles at other companies that don't have some of that executive buy-in or understanding or feel like it is something that you just said was like, oh, this is just disruptive, another thing. Like, because I think that's almost something that I feel like a lot of people don't have the opportunity to sit across from a table and talk to you guys. But like, I can imagine that's a burning question from folks of like, man, just tell me where to start. Tell me like some, give me some encouragement of, you know, what I should be considering or thinking as it relates to talking to our leadership team about this.
Or some lessons learned.
Yeah.
Of so like I can, things that you just look back on and like, wow, yeah. I could have definitely done this differently.
I mean, I'll share my perspective. I know Josh has a really good perspective on this as well. So I wasn't the first innovation lead for the company, right? This thing started in 2011 by employee number 9, Jim Washburn. And the goal was, let's just free our employees from, you know, being constrained. Let's open them up to try new things and be okay with failing, honestly. Let's get them to try new things. Let's just get them comfortable with that idea, right? So Jim really led the charge to get the company thinking in a different way, because once you're able to try things and test things without the fear of failing, like, you become a critical thinker at that point. That's about the time when I sort of transitioned into the role. And my focus at that point was, okay, now that we know how to try things, let's figure out how to be disciplined in that approach. Let's figure out a framework. Let's figure out the process and how we talk to startups. So to answer your question, Grant, my perspective on that is, start with just freeing up folks and how they think and how they approach a problem, and get them to be comfortable with not looking at the results or the outcomes, and then, you know, start there. Get leadership buy-in, show to the leadership of how this adds value and it's good for the business to do that. And once you do that, that's sort of some of the baby steps to get there.
Yeah, I mean, you're completely right though, especially like the first thing people get hung up on is like, I need to figure out an ROI, or this first test project, it has to be successful or it's going to be a failure. I mean, how about yourself, Josh? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I echo a lot of what Koshal just said. I think that, you know, it really starts with culture. I would advise to really start looking at how can we build a culture of innovation. Like, that's kind of was a buzzword that's sort of lost its buzz, if you will. But I think that is really, really important. You got to start with the culture. You got to start with people. And I think that the seeds of executive buy-in are in the culture that the people cultivate. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, I'll tell a little story. Like, I got into this role about a year and a half ago when Koshal was transitioning into his new role. And I had an interesting perspective because I went from sort of being a customer of the innovation process to now a champion of it. And what I found was that even as a customer, I didn't quite understand, like, I thought I did, right? I thought I really understood it, but then I also jumped into being a part of creating it and realized that we probably need to evolve it a little bit, for one. And two, there's a cyclical process, just like anything else, where we build it up and, you know, it sort of deteriorates if we don't maintain it, and then we got to build it up again. And so there's sort of this, like, okay, well, how do we advise even our own teams or coach our own teams on how to build this up? And even through the years, we've grown to the point where, like, you know, we need to be more effective in multiplying our efforts. So, like, I took that framework that Koshal built and said, okay, well, how do we, you know, train people a little bit further and give them a little bit more detail? And that's where I started, was build a community of people in your organization. And in our case, we call these innovation core groups, and they're a local volunteer peer group that we encourage to meet on a regular basis. And we encourage them to talk about the challenges on their projects. We encourage them to talk about projects that are coming up and the potential challenges that they may face. And then, how can you look at those challenges in a new light? What do we not have today, or what are we not doing today, that translates to solutions and processes that allow us to solve those challenges? And what do you need to get there? And so part of what I provide is, like, I help them with understanding the tools and resources that we have. And then I help develop the process that allows that to happen with their feedback. So I think it really starts with the culture of innovation and developing that community, so folks can start talking about the challenges they're having. Like, if you ask them, right, people will tell you their problems, right? And I don't mean their, you know, personal problems, but I mean, like, what issues are you having at work that you, like, there's things that happen on our job sites that probably happen way too much. And when you get people talking about them and sharing their experiences, you'll start to realize that, oh, well, that happens there and happens over there and it happens over there. And all of a sudden you start to realize the scale. And like I said, that's the seed. The building the culture is the seed for the executive buy-in, because as soon as the executives realize that that's happening everywhere, it becomes a business challenge.
I'm feverishly taking notes over here. I'm actually trying to compete with you.
Coastal,
but hey, what are you guys writing, poems to each other?
Honestly.
Hey.
I've never seen someone take notes as a guest. Can I just give you some kudos over here, man? You ask for a pen and paper. I'm like, I don't. Take mine. But what I want to camp on a little bit, because I think what I'm hearing from what you guys are saying is kind of this, like, what are the ingredients for a culture of innovation? And I think what you said a little earlier is just like, hey, freeing up folks. Like, that's a huge ingredient for this idea of a culture of innovation. And then I think what something you said, Josh, was like, this idea of community. Of like, hey, once you do free folks up and give them that freedom to say, hey, don't worry about failing. Failing is going to help us. Oh, by the way, why don't you share your failures amongst other people so that you can kind of build on that? Are there other ingredients that you guys have seen that kind of build that culture of innovation? Because again, I feel like we're talking to someone who's excelling in this very well. And again, I want to give this perspective to folks that can see like, oh, those are maybe my building blocks that I need to go and kind of take away from listening to something like this.
I think leadership support is huge. I mean, I can tell you that there's a lot of times where, you know, we had some failures that I don't want to get into, but I was like, oh shit, the boss is going to be mad at me. But the boss was like, no, go figure it out. Stick with it. Go figure it out. Right? Having that type of support from leadership is huge. The ask of me, my expectation was, he's like, I want you to go figure out how are you going to create the environment for people to experiment? And if you really examine, lean in and understand what that really means, that's very hard to do. Like, figure out how you can get people to experiment. You know, what's that environment look like? And then you start peeling away the layers, you understand, well, there's a people component to it. There's a culture component to it. There's a process component to it. There's a removing roadblocks component to it. Sometimes people just need an encouragement. They just need somebody to bounce off an idea, right? The stuff that Josh is talking about, of these little challenges popping up in different areas. You don't know that until you start documenting what people are learning, right? And you start examining those lessons learned and understand, okay, this is not just a Sacramento problem or a SoCal problem or New Jersey problem. It's understanding the environment that these people are working in and what are the challenges that they're facing and how those challenges align with each other to solve that problem.
Yeah,
I definitely want to talk a little bit more about something you said, Josh, which was like those core groups. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, for some of the people listening on here, their technology department is the VDC manager doing tech on the side. Right? Like, and that's it. And their budget is whatever they can build to a project. They don't necessarily have a budget. And it's interesting because at a certain point when you're doing that, like, you become the bottleneck where you're just like one person that needs, and you have multiple projects that want to get into this. Like, could you talk more about like leveraging those type of core groups, or like what's the diversity in job titles in those, and like how that came about?
Yeah. So first I want to touch base on that question that Grant posed, because
Brian, stop.
No. That's a really good one.
We've never had competing questions here. So
that's a really good one. And I do want to, cause I was in that boat. So yeah. I kind of feel like I got a good perspective on that, but I think it's it's all of those things, right, that Koshal mentioned, and the way that I sort of frame it for our groups. And I didn't come up with this. There's a really good book called The Invisible Advantage that talks about creating a culture of innovation. And I don't know if I'll get all of them exactly the way that they talk about them, but the way that I frame it to the core group is I sort of pull out a couple of these things. And like when we look at basics of digital transformation, you talk about people, process, technology, and data. And so those things are really good. But what I do is I take out the technology, because we already have the tech is already there. That's the shiny object that people are like, oh, you're just wanting to do tech. It's like, okay, well, no, we need to focus on the community. That's the people, the process. That's our tools and resources and the way that we do things and the way that we fund them or, you know, evaluate the solutions or whatever. And then the data is the lessons learned and the evaluations and the teaching ourselves, teaching our future selves what happened so that we can not forget how to build the pyramids. Then there's two more things. There's leadership. Like, how are we supporting these things? What is leadership doing that either supports that culture of innovation or encourages people to talk amongst themselves, encourages leadership and sort of that top down aspect We have a lot of bottom up and grassroots stuff, but we really need both to get the right mm-hmm. adoption and to get accelerated adoption, right? You need both. And then the last piece is rewards and recognition. You need people to feel like if I do this, people are going to hear about it, or something's going to change, or I'm going to get some sort of warm and fuzzy or compensate, whatever the thing that they want or whatever is possible, right? And so I think all those things sort of need to come together. To bring that to the innovation core groups, I ask them to focus specifically on the people, the processes, and the data, because that's where I need help as an innovation leader. I need their help communicating with the local community and building that community so that I have a network of folks that I can go to. The best mix of roles and responsibilities or people coming to that group is as diverse as possible. I want people from pre-con. I want people from our self-perform teams. I want people that are superintendents. I want craft in there. I want BDC in there. I want everybody, because I want different perspectives poking at the same solutions. I want people, all of them, poking holes in, well, okay, that's cool, but are people really going to use it, right? I want that perspective, right? And I want somebody saying no, and I want somebody saying yes, and I want them to talk to each other, and hopefully over drinks, because that makes it more interesting.
Drinks definitely helps. Yeah, and that's really interesting too. I'm curious on the core groups. Is that something that you kind of, so your role kind of being a little bit more on, sorry, I wrote it down here, innovation lead. Is that kind of your responsibility? Is it like kind of overseeing those core groups, or like what, I guess what I'm trying to ask is like, what's in it for the core group, and then who's like kind of held accountable to it? Does that make sense?
So let me kind of give you some context of how we came up with the idea on the core group stuff. So Jim, when he initially started the group, right, the idea behind building a community was his idea. He said, as a group of three overhead folks focused purely on innovation, we can only do so much, right? We hit a critical mass. We get to a point where we can't take on anymore. We can do way more if we teach others what we know so they can help us. And that's where the idea of this core groups came out. We used to call it the innovation pods back in the day. And it was just building this community and then continuing to grow that community. When we evolved and we said, okay, we need to call it the innovation core group, and what's the reasoning behind that? The thought was, there are some young, really sharp folks that enter the industry with some great ideas, right? But sometimes they need to be in a position where they can do something about it or push it or get buy-in from other folks, right? And that takes some leadership skills, some leadership development. So our thought was, we go to the business unit leaders in each of the business units and say, hey, who are your top, you know, young professionals that maybe need some practice on this development side, leadership development side? You know, share their names with us. We will work with them. We will teach them the innovation skills that we need. We have some asks of them. And our goal is to develop them as leaders, expose them to other parts of the business they may not get from a project. And at the same time, they're helping us be the extension to the job sites. Mm-hmm. And what that allows us to do is do a ton of pilots. That allows the innovation team to not only coach and mentor, you know, these folks in design thinking skills, understand what the leadership and the executive sort of focus is. And, you know, each business unit has a specific focus and a priority. So we can't take a one size fits all and just run it across the board. And we have to understand what those unique differences are. And I think with Josh's role, what's been great is now he's the lead. He's the one that's now working with these professionals and working with these business units, aligned the business needs with innovation practice. And not only that, he's developing leaders in, as part of the process. So,
and oftentimes overlooked part, like, let's just not innovate to innovate, right? Like, let's build people. Technology has a really fun way of helping enable that, but it can also be a really big divider if not done well, and can just cause for a lot of, we've heard it said, I know you guys both know Jeff Sample, mm-hmm. right? And this is the second time I've quoted him. So Jeff, two on the scoreboard, but
a lot of Jeff quotes going on.
He just talked about how like technology is an accelerant, right? And this idea that, hey, it can help accelerate development, to your point, or it can really help accelerate just the destruction of something and can divide people really, really quickly if not handled just in the right ways. And it's interesting how you guys are kind of laying the groundwork of like, hey, this isn't about innovation. Like, it is in some ways, but it is about you as a individual and you as a leader in this company and you growing and developing as a leader in this company through this idea of innovation. And, oh, by the way, we're going to take you along this journey and also hopefully develop some skills that you will find valuable, even if this software that you love goes away in maybe however many years and doesn't exist anymore. So,
yeah. And there's an interesting like piece to this as well. Right. So I kind of glossed over it, but it is a volunteer group, right? And that does two things. It makes it really difficult, but it also weeds out and finds the people that really desire to influence change. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, well, you know, I'd love to sort of mandate it, but it's like that won't have the same effect as finding the people who I probably wouldn't be here if I didn't have the ability to have the flexibility of working it into my VDC role of being able to try new things and sort of like work in some of the tech stuff and sort of developing partnerships and things like that into my role. Mm-hmm. And I think that you've got to find those people, right? And I think that there's probably those people at every company, right? And you know, back to the sort of like the advice stuff of, you know, companies that are struggling with that. It's like, find those people, put them together and sort of see what happens, build that community. And so it's the volunteer piece sort of makes it where we can extend our efforts. And we're working really hard to teach those folks even more of what we know and get our tribal knowledge out there as much as possible so that they can be as autonomous and sort of self-serving with our support. But that volunteer piece is sort of this weird, like, you know, double-sided edge.
You don't have to be here. Like, this is something that, you know, hopefully you are finding value in investing your time
with. I mean, I can tell you that there was a really pleasant surprise that came out of this effort. This is our top talent.
The folks that are, that. I mean, yeah. Keep going.
Like, the folks who are doing this, they already have 10, 12-hour days. And they're adding more to their plates because they believe in it and they're passionate about it, right? So I talked to the business owner, well, who else would you want running your business down the road? This is your top talent. They have the passion, they have the desire, they have the skills. And now we're refining those skills by putting them in a leadership role.
Yeah, Brian and I were just talking about this topic the other day of just, hey, what's scarier? A lack of folks coming into our industry with those skills or excitement around technology and eventually leaving. That's scary one. Scary two is the people that are in our industry that are leaving because they aren't getting what they are hoping for either in the development or in the companies that they work for. Like, both very scary in ways that we think about, like, oh man, what does 5 years look like at companies that aren't choosing to make investments into that you know, space's development.
And it's also unfortunate because there are companies out there that, you know, do have that type of ecosystem like a DPR, but some people might just write that off as the industry problem, not necessarily like wherever they're at.
Yeah. I to your point a little bit on the leadership track of like, hey, these are the best and brightest. Are there folks that have kind of gone through either one of these innovation core groups and like just continue to accelerate in their career? Like, I mean, yeah.
I was part of the pod
say, like,
when
yeah,
it was, when I was it was part called of the an pod innovation in Sacramento.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that like kind of a, I'm almost thinking.
And
like,
we're not the only ones.
Like an alumni, right? It's like, hey, like you, not only are, there's just so many benefits of, we could talk about just community in general, but like you guys have a really good bond. You know, move to different parts of the country or you are connected in ways. Like, it's just really interesting to kind of hear out your list of ingredients of, you know, community, freeing up folks, leadership support, rewards and recognition. Like if you really are infusing those into the core parts of your business, and the core parts of what you are doing in innovation, like, hey, executive buy-in, that's just a result. You know, that's not necessarily the strategy that you're necessarily playing. I mean,
especially having something like that when, you know, a company that is growing so fast, that culture can die out pretty quickly if you don't have it being amplified.
It's fragile.
It's very, I mean,
yeah, it's definitely super delicate.
The speed at the at what you guys have grown in the last couple of years.
Still growing.
Still growing.
Number six.
That's one of the challenges I faced coming into this role was like, oh my gosh, we've grown and there's, you know, areas where people have gotten busy and they haven't had the time or the bandwidth to maintain, you know, the culture that they were. And it's sort of like, okay, well, we got to encourage those folks that still want to do it to push forward. And then we've got to recruit, you know, new blood that has that energy and, you know, that'll get more people involved as well.
So to answer your question, have folks grown and taken on other roles? Two of the folks on Jim Washburn's original team in 2012, two of them run business units of their own. Mm. So John Vardaman runs at Nashville. You got Alicia Lowe, who now runs at
business
SoCal.
In SoCal,
yeah. It's just crazy. This may seem like a strange question to ask, but like the leadership and exec team at DPR, how would they like summarize or phrase an innovation core group in like three words? Like what would they call it? Like, hey, they're talking to a buddy or a peer in the industry of like, hey, we got these innovation core groups. These are the things that stand out of the value that brings in three words.
I'm going to punt that question to
three words is tough.
You can take five if you want, but
like a sentence is usually what I boil it down to. And it's, I call it a volunteer peer group that creates and maintains the culture of innovation.
And the value that comes from that group is maintaining the just culture of innovation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, critical link between our job sites and our strategy. And you're doing that through innovation practice. Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so fascinating. I've always admired DPR from the other side of the fence. And now to kind of hear a little bit more of behind the scenes to it, it's just really encouraging, you know. And we have friends and colleagues in the industry and, you know, that work at a handful of different companies. And it's just cool to really hear how much you guys have really taken this on of like, hey, this isn't just a part of our company. This is our company. Like, this is a part of our DNA. This is ever forward. Like, this is what we mean by that.
Even the strategic hiring process. Like, I remember when DPR like was in Boston, I really started. I was like, okay, I always saw DPR as a West Coast company. I was like, all right. And then I started seeing them pop up in Boston. And then like the people I was seeing strategically that they were recruiting from other companies were like a very specific type of personality. And I thought, I mean, you could see it from every single person that I saw that ended up going there.
I want to, one, just be respectful of y'all time. Yep. This is the hardest part about these is we could go on for hours.
Yep.
I want to land the plane a little bit with kind of a closing thought. What are you most excited about? Just this idea of what we've been talking about here of kind of your guys' core groups. And what are you keeping your eye on that you're maybe a little concerned is not the right way, but just something that you're really attentive to as you think about a big challenge to kind of overcome. So an excitement and a big challenge that you're thinking as it relates to these kind of core groups.
I would say what comes to mind in terms of a challenge is evolving, right? And sort of learning from our growth and the things that we've built up and taking the processes that we've had and sort of evolving them to work with us the way that we are now and allowing us to plan better and prioritize better. We've got a lot of focus around prioritization. So I'm trying to pull that back all the way through to our even solution evaluation process. And how do we look at solutions and say, okay, well, you know, if that doesn't match with our strategies at all, like we don't even need to waste our time kind of thing. And then how do we do a much better job of planning out and understanding even the potential ROI of testing something so that when we get to a point of adoption, executive buy-in, like we have more of a story to tell. So that's a big thing that I see as a challenge that I'm tackling right now. As far as things that I'm excited about, there's lots of things to be excited about right now.
How much time do we have? Question.
Yeah, that's I want to hit a dinger on that one, but it's like, you know, the buzzword is AI right now. I mean, yeah, everybody's excited about AI, but I'm really excited about these things. Like I like to envision how things converge and how technology sort of comes together and visualize what that can look like. And we're starting to see a lot more realization in generative AI and robotics and reality capture and all these kinds of things. And I think there's a few of those things that we're just getting to we're just seeing the baby steps of those. And I think what really excites me is those things coming together in a way that 1 + 1 = 3 or 4 or 5. And I feel like a lot of folks are sort of waking up to the power of AI, the power of machine learning. We've been talking about it for a long time, and saying that it's, you know, it's here, it's been in our phones for a long time. And it's sort of like, again, the pace of change, right? And now all of a sudden everybody's aware of it. And so they're going to have either a knee-jerk reaction that, no, that's going to take my job, or, ooh, that can help me do my job. And so I'm really excited about that, because I think that we're going to convert a lot of people with the ROI that they're going to see from just trying things out. And so I'm just really excited about a lot of these things coming together. And that is leading toward like the industry as a whole, a lot of general contractors, a lot of companies that, you know, are seen as competition are coming together and being collaborative. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited about those things.
Yeah, we could camp out on those for a little long too. No, that's great. And the collaborative part is really exciting. We talked a bit about this a little bit on the last season of like, man, remember 10 years ago when like technology was kind of what everyone did in the corner and they're like, nope, we're not talking about that. Like, and now here we are 10 years later with companies that are...
We were the guys in the corner.
Yeah. I think we all were.
Oculus SDK 1.
But it's hard though, right? I mean, you look at it now and it's like, hey, these are the things that bond us more than they separate us.
Absolutely.
And I think that's... And not only that, but these are the things that we're going to actually be able to do more together than what we really had kind of selfishly thought we were going to do independently. And
yeah.
Anyway, that lots to talk about there. Coach, any thoughts to challenge and excitement?
So what I'm excited about is this tremendous amount of innovation happening outside of our doors with a lot of startups, entrepreneurs trying to tackle a lot of challenges that they have uncovered in the industry, right? So I'm excited of what it can do for the industry and how it's going to help us propel forward. So there's a lot there to sort of dive into. And I think a challenge is that we don't include our craft enough. You know, I'm not the one out there swinging the hammer, but I'm supporting the guy or the gal who is swinging the hammer, right? So they got to have more ideas than what I have. And they are facing the problems. They're in it, in the trenches, coming up with these problems. And so how are we supporting them, right? A couple of years ago, we created a role, a field innovation lead role, and it's worked out well for us. I think we need to do more of that in the industry. That's a challenge. Hmm.
Yeah, well said.
And I think I remember watching video, like old YouTube videos, you guys or somebody from DPR used to make. I don't know if they were official or who
Gary?
Was. Yeah. It was a long time ago. But I remember used to watch it. It was all field teams, and he was just like, "Hey, like show me what you made." Like innovation does not always come in the package of a software.
Yep. It's not.
Right? Yeah. So I remember seeing those videos. I was like, "Wow." And then, lo and behold, now we're on the podcast together. So yeah,
there it is. Awesome. So fun. Guys, I feel like we need to run it back. There's so many other topics I wrote down here. and this truly is the hardest part. It's just finding something and really diving in and then like, I want to go into some of these other things. But man, really great stuff to unpack. And again, we just hope for the folks that are listening and tuning in, it's like, hey, if you're not taking notes, you're missing out. And two, if you haven't connected with these guys on LinkedIn and just through other channels, like please do. That's what's really fun about this too, is you hear about some of the connections that are made. Probably one of my favorite ones is someone ended up getting a different job after they were on the podcast together at the same company. They didn't really know about the departments, or they knew about the departments, but it was funny that ended up leading to a potential job opportunity.
Nice.
Not saying that that's going to happen here. Clearly, you guys are on the track of...
Hopefully, at least to us getting some vests, though. Some of those WND vests.
If you're only listening, Coach's got an amazing little Patagonia vest on here. So we should be sending them the Built Different swag.
Yeah, we'll do a jersey swap.
I
like it.
That's the way to go.
Autograph the jerseys, too.
That sounds great. I'm not going to take off my shirt, though, Brian. I'll take off the vest. That ends up working out. Well, fellas, thank you again. This is super fun. We appreciate the time. I think we're in between you guys in a happy hour. So, one, it's just great to make the time carving out for these conversations. Really appreciate it. So many follow-up questions, and we hope for those that are tuning in and listening that you took away some great notes and to reach out to these guys and if you have some good questions to follow up. So thank you all for tuning in. Appreciate your guys' time.
Hey, thank you both.
Thanks for having us. Let's do it again.
Awesome. Let's do it again. We appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next one. Thanks, team.
Make sure to subscribe to Built Different on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Let's build this community together.